Hello and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson from Awin's Global Strategy Team, and I'm joined today by my usual co-host, Kevin Edwards, Awin's Global Strategy Director. Hi, Kev.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Filming on a fairly drab, soon to be dark, now kind of almost November, Monday afternoon, but you know.
Yeah, it's 10 to 4 on a Monday afternoon here in London, and already we had the clocks went back.
Correct.
Forward.
Yeah. Back. Oh. Fall back. Spring
went
forward.
Back. Yeah. I made that mistake once when I was about 17, turned up at my supermarket Saturday job a full 2 hours, I think, ahead of when I was supposed to actually start, which is kind of depressing.
Did you get paid for them?
No, I waited around on a park bench for somebody to open up the actual store. So, but anyway, it's been a busy few weeks here at Awin Towers since the last episode, as the event season has fully swung into action. And a couple of weeks ago, we had both the Global Performance Marketing Awards and PI Live, one of the industry's biggest annual conferences, which is hosted here in London. And I'm delighted to say that we got a chance to speak to the man behind those events and many others, as well as two of the more prominent industry-focused publications, Performance In and Talking Influence, and that was Matt Wood. So Matt recently announced the merging and rebranding of those publications to Hello Partner. So Kev, you got a chance to sit down with him recently and discuss that shift, didn't you?
Yep. Always nice to catch up with Matt. He has obviously been around in the industry for a couple of decades now. So he's seen it sort of go through all different iterations. And we had a chat about kind of the new chapter, really the new phase, and about the bringing together really of two historically, I guess, sort of quite disparate industries, the influencer and the affiliate stroke partnership industries, and about how they're kind of coalescing and merging. And that's obviously a big driver behind their kind of rebranding, which is due to be complete. It's due for kind of the full launch at some point this month. And Matt talks a little bit about that in our interview.
Yeah. Well, in addition to that interview, I also spoke to one of our most high-profile tech partners in the shape of Pete James, who joined us from Revlifter. So Pete is actually an ex-Awinner himself, so it was nice to reconnect and find out what he's been up to over there. And he explained a lot more about their new product, RevWallet, which is helping advertisers to further personalize and improve customer experiences on their own websites. But before those interviews, Kev, it's probably a good chance for us to reflect on this year's PI Live conference. What you were actually hosting a session there. What was that about, and how did you actually enjoy the event this year?
Yeah, so my session was on day one. Fortunately, it's always better to have it on day one. I think your attendance tends to be better. Everyone seems to be a bit sort of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed compared to the second day. It was a bit of an impromptu session. So Matt, who I previously mentioned, I contacted him a few weeks prior to the event and said, can we sort of gate crash your event and maybe steal a lunchtime session? So a session that didn't really exist. So we ate into to lunch on day one. And really, it was an opportunity for me alongside a couple of other people from the industry, so Linda from CJ and Ant from AdTraction, to talk around the advertiser study, the UK advertiser study that had recently been released. And we were able to kind of share for the first time some insights from that on day one of the event. The study had been put together fairly hurriedly, but it was sort of trying to emulate some work that we did last year, at the beginning of last year. And that one was done in conjunction with the IAB. This one was done independently. So it was just a collection of people contacting each other and saying, should we have another stab at trying to do this survey and turn it around? And so we surveyed almost 140 advertisers and agencies. And we just sort of tried to really take the temperature of the industry and the channel and kind of people's perception. So really what we wanted to, the two things that we presented on the day were really, the two key themes were really A, kind of how healthy the channel is in terms of what people are investing and sort of how optimistic they are around where they're going to invest more in the channel, if at all, and why the key drivers for that investment, what the key drivers for that investment are. And then the second element really focused in on specific affiliate and publisher trends. So to give you kind of a few highlights, we asked all the respondents whether they plan to invest more or less or about the same in the affiliate channel compared to their other channels. So, you know, against all of the other paid channels that they're investing in. And almost half of them said that they plan to spend more. And actually that dwarfed the 4% who'd actually said they'd be spending less. So that was a pretty positive headline that we were able to sort of kick off with. We also, where some of the more interesting data sets came about was when we cross-referenced data from different questions. So we also asked advertisers how much they spent on the channel and also what percentage of revenue was derived from the channel. And obviously they kind of were bucketed into different amounts. And typically what we found is that the more that people are spending, either absolutely or as a percentage of their overall spend, that they typically were more optimistic and that they were planning on spending more. They kind of over-indexed on that first question. So we took that as quite positive. I guess that you could say that that's potentially linked to the fact that for those advertisers that are spending more, they've maybe done their due diligence. They've maybe been around for a while longer. They sort of have a greater confidence in that the money they're investing in the channel is delivering good ROI and valuable sales for them. And then the other sort of core area that I just touched on is the focusing on the different publisher types and where brands are looking to invest. And again, we asked a headline question, which was, do advertisers and agencies feel that there are more or less or about the same new publisher opportunities than there were 12 months ago? And again, a very similar amount, so almost half said that they thought there were more. And then we asked them within that to sort of drill down into the types of publishers that they want to invest more in over the next 12 months. And it probably wouldn't come as any surprise to you because if we'd asked this 10 years ago, editorial would have come out top then, and it came out top quite clearly in first place. We asked them to pick three publisher models they want to invest in more over the next year out of a list of 10. Editorial came out top. The second was influencer, which obviously probably wouldn't have been there 10 years ago. But again, coming back to the point I was talking about, Matt, I think it reflects how those two spaces are kind of morphing and becoming more aligned. And then we asked a few sort of qualitative questions as well around what kind of people's perceptions of the channel. And interestingly, there was a bit of a on paper contradiction in that people said that they loved the kind of the variety of opportunities, but they also said that that was a problem. And we kind of interpreted that data to suggest that maybe we as networks need to do a better job around things like curation and advertisers being able to find who those publishers are and know how they work and know how to work with them, trying to kind of shortcut that for them. And that's obviously a core thing that we're focusing on as a network over the sort of coming 12 to 18 months. And then one final thing that we presented on is we wanted to understand that in the current cost of living crisis, whether the affiliate channel will be used to help brands achieve their sales targets. The result was was kind of overwhelming, almost 7 in 10 saying that they thought it would be a useful driver for them. So I guess sort of the next sort of 4 to 6 weeks around peak will show just how much that's the case.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was a few different strands from those insights that you shared on the day that really segued quite nicely into the other session that we had at the event, which was being led by David Lloyd, Awin's Chief Customer Officer, and it was his debut at the event. So first time that he'd had to kind of get up and speak to the industry in the UK and kind of speak. It's a very much a very familiar event and environment for people within the affiliate world. And so it was a nice opportunity for him to introduce himself. And his session was all about publisher diversity. It's a theme that we're continuing to actively pursue, I think, in our content and our comms at the moment. It's a real trend that we're seeing within the industry. And his session was called Exploding the Funnel, how affiliates are driving value far beyond the last click. And it's like this idea really that, you know, you've got the traditional marketing funnel. It takes you from awareness and interest through those phases to desire or decision and action. But actually affiliates can help you reach all those touch points and a lot more, because we're with the introduction of technology partnerships, brand partnerships, you've got these new strategies of working within affiliate that allow you to augment maybe more traditional marketing campaigns with more on-site optimization, more customer loyalty, customer experience based activities that are providing a whole host of different KPIs that you would normally not associate with the affiliate channel, I think. So he used this clock model analogy that we've been using in various pieces of content and presentations we've been doing recently. And he kind of took you hour by hour through this clock, showing you how affiliates are helping to drive everything from brand awareness and decision-making through to new customer acquisition, through to kind of retention and loyalty and all of these different aspects of the customer journey, and how different affiliates doing different types of activity can provide a whole host of different types of value to you as an advertiser or brand, which I think went down pretty well. And it was the theme that I saw echoed in a few of the other sessions on that day. So it's clearly something that is on a lot of people's at the forefront of their mind right now, I think, this reframing of what affiliates can do and that diversity of marketing options that they can now offer.
I think the session was very well attended. And actually, David did something quite interesting at the start, which obviously you mentioned that it was his first event, and he asked people to put their hands up if it was their first event. And we know it as sort of the traditional event that kind of people go to year in, year out. But actually, there was a very high percentage of people that put their hands up that hadn't been before. So it definitely felt as if there was some new blood. It was really felt very, very buzzy on day one. So I took that as being sort of like quite a positive signal, really, as to sort of how much people want to learn about the channel, but also potentially we're going for an increasingly wider audience as more and more businesses embrace it and come into the space.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I'm hoping to record a version of David's presentation so that that's available on video, and we'll look to share that in the coming weeks. So keep your eyes peeled for that. But in terms of your insights, Kev, from the presentation that you shared, I know that we posted something on LinkedIn recently, so that's available on social channels. But where else might people be able to kind of find that deck?
So depending on how quickly I get round to pulling the rest of the insights, because there are about 22 questions, we probably presented about a third of the insights at the event, because we only had a half an hour. I do want to put some more additional content into a broader deck that people can use, people can download and use that data as they see fit. You know, whether it's brands wanting to present internally to other brands, whether it's agencies using it to talk to their brands, publishers kind of, you know, sharing different trends with brands that they work with. So what I'm planning to do is, when that is done, we will upload it to the website where we're currently storing, as an industry, a guide around tracking. And I can't for the life of me remember what the URL is off the top of my head. However, we will include it in the notes, and I'll make sure that we reference it on a future edition. And as you say, we have pushed it out through LinkedIn, and I will also, when it's done, I'll be pushing it out. And also, if you're a UK advertiser or indeed publisher on the network, then we'll try and distribute it through our kind of usual email comms and newsletters as well.
That URL that you were just searching for is affiliatepartnertracking.com, if my memory serves correctly.
At time of recording, it's not on there. However, as I say, when I've done the content, when I finish the content, we'll upload a copy there. So bookmark that, and it should magically appear one day.
Okay, without further ado, let's jump into today's interviews. Later, I speak to RevLifter's global commercial director, Pete James. But right now, it's Kev's conversation with Matt Wood, founder of Hello Partner.
So I'm joined now by Matt Wood. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Obviously, we were catching up a bit last week. We're recording now towards the end of October. We've just got over PI Live, and also the awards, and also your influencer event as well. Like, just a really, really busy week for you last week. How did it go for you? But what were your kind of highlights for the week?
Gosh, well, first, thanks for having us on the podcast. It's a real pleasure to be here. I mean, the last week was wow, it was crazy. I think when we decide to do three events in 72 hours, we sometimes forget how much work it takes. And people forget sometimes that Old Billingsgate, when we arrive on Sunday morning at 6 a.m., it's an empty shell. There's literally nothing there, right? So we have to build essentially a village or a community for for 2 days, and it takes 2 days to build the thing. Everything, every piece of furniture, the coffee carts, the stretch tent outside, of course, the AV, the stages, all of that gets put up in 2 days, and then it takes about 4 hours to rip it all down. But, you know, big shout out to my team at Hello Partner. You know, they put their heart and soul into the events, and I think this year is one of the best to date, really.
Yeah, it definitely seemed very, very busy. It seemed busier than last year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, remember last year we were sort of still lateral flow testing people into the venue. So I think, yeah, this year was looking at the stats just before the call. It was definitely our busiest. We've had more brands there than ever before, which was one of our KPIs. And I think the meetings as well, you know, we had over 4,500 accepted meetings over the course of 2 days. And, you know, there were a lot more people trying for a lot more. There was over 10,000 requests for meetings. And that is a logistical challenge, because you've got to remember, Old Billingsgate is an old fish market. It's not a purpose-built expo centre. So I think we'll probably open up more zones next year. We always like to sort of change the layout a little bit. We'll probably move the cloakroom to the vault downstairs. We've never used the vault. It's an incredible space underneath the main floor. So we might even open it up to there next year and mix things around.
I thought what was... David Lloyd, our CTO, presented on day one, and it was his first time ever at PI Live. And he actually asked the question of the audience, how many of you have been to a PI Live before? And I sat at the front, I was actually surprised by how many hands went up. So it definitely felt as if there was kind of like some new blood in the room, like quite a considerable number of people that had never been before.
Yeah, we'll have to look at the metrics on that. But yeah, we do try our best to get new blood each year. And I think, you know, we had, of course, the brands, a complimentary scheme for brands, and that helped massively. We did monitor each one and approve each one. So the quality of the delegate this year, I think, is something we worked on. And I think that's what we pride about our shows, really, is that we don't want anybody off the street to be coming in like a standard exhibition. We do have big quality control over who you're talking to, because you've got such limited time. We don't want people to have wasted conversations there. So, yeah, we're excited. And of course, we're back next year at Billingsgate. We're going to do another year there. I just don't want to go to XL personally.
No,
it's just a void of a hall. We would lose the quirkiness of Billingsgate. And I know it has its challenges for everybody, including one loading bay and like one lift. But apart from that, it's a beautiful venue.
It's pretty easy if you work at Awin, because it is literally a 10-minute walk from our office, but on a very selfish level. You mentioned obviously wanting to get brands, that they're obviously kind of, you know, the holy grail, trying to get as many good brands to come along. Are there any kind of other sort of particular partner types or sort of demographic that you're interested in attending?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that massive diversification, I guess, of the publisher and the affiliate types over the last couple of years. And I think we've seen that in the industry as a whole. And of course, the influencer marketing show for us this year doubled in size. And I've got a funny feeling that might even be bigger than PI Live in the years to come. That particular industry is growing at such an extraordinary rate. And I think as a whole, we're still working out where it fits into the affiliate or outcome-based sector, but it's something that we're very thrilled to be running those events for. And I think that's got massive potential for a bit of crossover into our channel.
Could you ever envisage it running it as like one event, or would you kind of want to keep it as a distinct standalone one-day event?
That's the big question. I think there's people that want a bit of both. There's a side that can see the creator economy and the influencer channel moving to outcomes. You know, Acceleration Partners, for example, have that thought process. But then you've got others in the more creative side of influencers that don't see it as that. And I think that's something that we will work out, I think, over the next couple of years. You know, when we launched the awards, the Influencer Marketing Awards, I kind of did the categories, and I kind of did it very much from a results-driven perspective. And then when we went to the due diligence stage, we kind of like, you know, I got it completely wrong, because it's all about the influencer channel is all about kind of like very different objectives. They can use creators for very different means. Some of it is, of course, getting, you know, hard sales, but a lot of it are different KPIs and different objectives that they have for a campaign. And that's very different. But I also see that happening in the affiliate channel, because affiliates and the performance side, the KPIs that brands are giving partners now aren't necessarily all just about getting them over the line for the sale. It can be other metrics as well. So that's quite an interesting development.
Yeah, it is an interesting development. It's one that I think that we've known has kind of been like quite nascent. It's kind of been under the surface for quite a long time, I would say. You know, we've known all of the early funnel stuff is important for like well over a decade, I'd say. But it's sort of how do you then elevate that and how do you actually turn it into something that's commercially viable, or how do you raise it from an awareness point of view whereby brands are actually willing to get on board and invest in it? So you mentioned the awards. Obviously, you run separate awards events as well, but are there any kind of particular trends you've noticed from this year's? The global PMAs were on the Monday, so the night before the first day of PI Live. Were there any kind of particular entries that stood out for you, or any kind of trends that you particularly noticed this year?
Plenty. I mean, I'm not able to judge these awards anymore, Kevin, but I get to sort of speak to the judges, and I can see that they're certainly, like I said, utilizing the channel for more broader outcomes. So I think that was seen as a trend this year, and adding value to the customer experience. That's a big one as well. So it's not necessarily just about performance anymore. It's about how technologies and partners can help meet those different types of objectives, whether it's, using card linked offers to look at, switching behavior from looking at what direct debits people are signed up for. So if they're, a BT customer, they can see, these guys are right for maybe Sky, and they can use that data through to the buy now, pay later, personalized data and personalized offers, all of those things. And I think the human touch, I think there's been a little bit of like, people get a bit confused when we have human touch in the judging criteria, but it's essentially the merging of technology and teams, and how teams can help with campaigns, because we are a people-driven industry. Some people disagree. Some people say it's all about the technology, but ultimately when you have a campaign between a brand and a publisher or other people, it's all about the human touch and how teams can effectively have that extra little slice of performance or marginal gain.
Okay, so we kind of talked a little bit about the events and like potentially kind of what the future vision looks like for currently running sort of those two distinct, like the, I suppose, like broadly the affiliate and partner event and then the influencer event. Yeah. You've recently announced that you're merging Performance In and Talking Influence Publications under one brand. Hello Partner is your new brand. Kind of what made you decide to take this approach, and kind of what are your plans for that venture?
Sure. I mean, I guess I've been going for nearly 20 years in this space, and we were known as affiliates for you back in the day. And
yeah, you have done it before.
It's kind of like how we're positioning ourselves. When we go out there for the influencer marketing show and we say that's organized by Performance In, it doesn't really connect particularly well. So we thought, well, let's look at Hello Partner. I think 90% of the people got it when they were at PR Live, and 10% of people thought we were an agency of some kind. But ultimately, it's a phased approach. So first phase is, Hello Partner is the umbrella company for everything that we do. We do 8 events now, seem to be more. And the second phase will be launching Hello Partner as a publication. And I think if we look back what we've done with Performance In, I think we could spend more attention on that. We've been focusing on our events. So we are now looking to invest further in journalism for Hello Partner. We are consolidating the titles, and we will be investing in more journalists. So we can look at the data side of things, the insight, and building a community throughout the year. So it's not just about coming to PR Live in London or PR Live in Miami or the influencer show in New York. It's about being able to connect with everybody throughout the year. So there's a lot of things bubbling behind the scenes. We keep ourselves incredibly busy to try and facilitate that.
Cool. Okay. So and the URL is hellopartner.com?
It is. Correct.
I'd figure that. It is actually live at the moment, although I think on the site it says, kind of watch this space kind of.
Yeah, that's right. The publication will be launching during November. So we will launch that. The team are busy writing content and going out to market to get content. And I'd imagine we'll have some kind of launch party in London as well for our clients. So we're looking forward to that. I mean, we're not going to say we're going to be the next Adweek, but we'd like to be more joined up with what we're doing as a company.
Yeah, it definitely feels as though, I mean, different publications have sort of really started to branch out into like performance generally. And it does feel as though it's a space that there's a lot of sort of interest in there. So I suppose it's like coalescing that interest and trying to sort of capture people's imagination and try and go out and maybe grab a bigger slice of that interest. So we've talked predominantly around the stuff that's happening in the UK. The last couple of episodes of the podcast, we've actually focused quite a lot on the US market. And I know obviously the US is a huge market. It's an important market from a performance affiliate point of view. And it's an important market for you guys as well. So kind of what are your ambitions for your US audience?
Yeah, I mean, we've always had sort of the US on our sites. And I think we kind of decided about a year ago to sort of go quite aggressive into that market. We did two events in New York this year. And we'll be doing an event in New York for the Influencer Show, and we'll be doing a 3-day event in Miami in April next year, which isn't that far away. Actually, we've got a lot to do. But that market in the US, and I listened to the podcast with Tricia from the PMA, and it's fantastic that, you know, that study is taking place in that market, and we can see the trends. I was also lucky enough to go to some industry events recently as well and speak to the main stakeholders. And I think it's just the size. The size is huge when compared to the UK. If you look at a Klarna or a Capital One Shopping, you know, generating 400 to 500 million in revenue, that kind of dwarfs the equivalents in the UK in that cashback side. And I can see the buy now, pay later is huge over there. People like Klarna and Affirm, those kind of guys. The incentive is still pretty huge out there. But it's also some encouraging signs around some of the agencies, the more mainstream agencies adopting the space, as well as the more traditional OPMs. So, you know, I'm thankful that we were able to go out there. You know, we've been wanting to do it for a considerable amount of time, and we hope to do that, you know, two and a half, 3-day show in Miami in April and bring the retailers and the e-commerce and the publishers and the creators to some wonderful locations in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, having been to a few US events, I guess the difference that I noticed between the UK and the US is that for me, the UK feels a little bit more relaxed. Obviously, the UK is a lot smaller. So much of it is based in London. And even if you're not in London, you can typically travel there and back in a day reasonably easily from a couple of, you know, the other sort of tech hubs in the UK. Whereas in the US, it tends to be, obviously, everything's quite dispersed and far away, which means that people really make an effort. It can be really intense. It's like 2 or 3 days of really intense networking.
It is. And I think that's what, there are some fantastic network-driven events out there, for sure. But I think the industry, you know, having somewhere where the whole community can come together. And we've tried to make it very much a destination event out there as well, because, you know, we understand people will need to be flying in. And that's why we've got the Partnership Awards co-located next year in April. So the US Partnership Awards, which launched this year in New York, will be moving there. So that's another reason to kind of network and celebrate with your peers over there.
Great. Well, thanks for chatting today, Matt. I think we're kind of questioned out. I guess hellopartner.com is the place to go and find out all the information from November, which is will be when this this podcast will be going out. So hopefully when you go over to hellopartner.com, you'll be able to find out all the information about all of the awards and all of the events that are coming up over the coming months. Thanks very much, Matt.
Thank you, Kevin. It's appreciated.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hi, Pete. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for dropping in.
Thanks for having me.
This is very familiar surroundings for you, being back at Awin.
Indeed, yeah. Back after a few years. I was in the office the other week for a meeting, but yeah, much has changed.
Yes.
Much has changed. Lots more working from home.
Yeah, well, I initially wanted to ask you a bit about your career rather than kind of diving straight into Revlifter, and really wanted to understand that you've had a kind of relatively long career in the affiliate industry. I mean, no disrespect by that. My career is almost as long.
All fine.
But you've worked at Awin, you worked at Groupon as well, and now you're at Revlifter. So you've had some interesting perspectives there across the industry with different kind of businesses of size and shape and their roles within it. What attracted you, do you think, to working with a technology startup or business like Revlifter right now?
I think just personally a different challenge. Like, obviously, Awin, great place to work, was here for a long time. And then Groupon, very different, much more sort of much more corporate, obviously based predominantly in America. So, but you know, Groupon was great because you get to work with so many different countries and offices and cultures, and that was a real learning curve. And then I sort of, you know, when I decided I wanted a new challenge, I thought, I've done network side, then sort of more traditional publisher. And I thought, you know, something in the tech space or client side was something that appealed to me. As to why specifically Revlifter, obviously had heard a lot about them. They were, you know, a bit of a competitor of Groupon. So I sort of, I was used to sometimes drawing battle lines and going up against them for certain sort of contracts and things like that. You know, exciting tech, lots of awards. They seemed like they were quick to sort of build new products. And then when I spoke to the team and sort of said, you know, the sort of move I was interested in making and the sort of job I wanted to do and sort of the things they needed someone to come in and do, it was actually quite a good match. You know, really aggressive growth targets over the next few years, as most sort of, I was going to say startup, and more of a scale up now. It just seemed like from what I wanted to focus on next and where I felt I could add some value, we were quite well aligned on that. But ultimately, just a really exciting company to join. And when I spoke to the founders, I really felt that excitement from them. And that was really important to me, because one of my favorite things about working for Awin was that I think you knew the people in charge had the right vision, or at least that's what I felt. And Revlifter was the same. Like, I could really see a clear direction of where they wanted to go. And that made me excited, seeing how excited they were for the business and that they really believed in it.
We wanted to get you in today to talk specifically about Rev Wallet, which is this new product that you brought to market. So I wanted to just ask if you could give us a bit of an overview on what it is, how it works, how it differs from maybe some of your previous product offerings, as well as how advertisers stand to benefit from deploying it.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, the main thing with Rev Wallet is it's a native on-site widget. So with RevPage, which was our first solution, that's its off-site in the PPC space. RevConvert is, I guess, a more traditional on-site overlay solution with some good AI and tech behind it. Rev Wallet is a widget that sits ideally on all pages on your website. It's non-intrusive, non-invasive, so the customer has to click to open it and actively engage with it. But ultimately, it's a way of storing all of your offers, your cross-sell, your upsell, ultimately whatever a client wants to put in there for the customer to see, we can house in there. So it sits in the bottom corner of the page, and when you click and open it, you can have a wide variety of things in there. You can have stretch and save bars. If you're, you know, £5 away from free delivery, then you can show a little slider on there. We can do product recommendations, and it can react specifically to what the user's doing on site, and that's really where the power sits. So it's sort of what the user sees is great, but it's the technology behind it that really makes it so powerful. So we've got a brilliant data scientist, a guy called Carl. He's got a PhD, so we call him Dr. Carl, obviously. Deserves his title. And he's built a fantastic like intent to buy score, and it will take you know, millions and millions of different data points across all of the journeys on site that our tag will track. And it will work out how likely a person is to make a purchase based on what they've been doing, who they are, what they've got in their basket, what pages they've looked on. So you and I could go on site and have different scores, and then we can get the product, RevWallet, to react to what your score is. So you could say, someone who's a 5 out of 5 likely to buy, we don't want to show them any offer whatsoever. We actually just want to increase their basket value. We want to show them some cross-sell. We want to show them that if they've got a necklace, then why don't they buy the earrings? Or if they've got some trainers, why don't they buy some socks? Whereas someone who's maybe a 2 out of 5 likely to buy, we can try and incentivize them to get across the line. So we might offer them £5 off an £80 spend if they've got, say, 65 in their basket, because we're going to then stretch the revenue of that client, but we're also going to close the deal. So it's an overused phrase, but sort of right offer to the right person at the right time, but also sometimes no offer if that person doesn't necessarily need one. And it's really agile as well, so you can tap into lots of different data points of the customer. We can bake in the margin that a particular product is going to have. So if we know that the user has, say, 5 out of 5 margin products in their basket, that's a really profitable customer. So we probably want to get them over the line more than we might want to have someone who has lower margin products in their basket. And we can also look at basket mix. So returns is a massive issue for the industry at the minute. And, yep, you know, you've got a lot of fashion clients are trying to solve that, but ultimately are also responsible for that. You know, we've perpetuated this idea that, you know, you can just buy anything you want and return it willy-nilly, and that's fine. But obviously now that's biting margins more and more and more. Clients are now wanting to solve that. So another thing we can do with RevWallet is we can see that if someone has, say, three products and six items, they probably have two of each size in each item. So they're going to return probably half of that basket. And actually, it doesn't always take much to push something like that into a loss-making customer. So what we can then do within the RevWallet is show them makeup or underwear or swimwear, which you can't return, and at least ring-fence some of that budget. So in terms of how it differs from other product offerings, it's just, it's much more intelligent, it's much more agile, and it's much more unique.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that returns dilemma, like you said, is like something that fashion retailers in particular feel acutely.
Yeah.
And there's the cost from the kind of the supply chain perspective and kind of like the logistics of setting that up and ensuring that those clothes can be sent back and then potentially repurposing those clothes so they can be resold at a later date. I was reading some article recently about like in America there were certain retailers that found it to be so cost inefficient that they were saying it was more economical for them to just tell their customers to, you know, keep the clothes because it's, we're not going to be able to resell this anyway, and it's just going to be end up being thrown away, and that's a terrible thing from a sustainability perspective and this kind of idea of a circular economy. So I think any technology that sits on a retailer's website that is hopefully helping to maybe prevent those type of inefficient or, you know, those purchases that are then going to just go to waste is a really positive thing.
Yeah, very much so. I think obviously can't say who it is or quote the exact stats, but like one of our clients told me the other day how much it cost them to process a return, and I was shocked how expensive it is. And it really makes it clear how it doesn't take much to make that customer, you know, borderline, you know, small profit or maybe even loss making once they return, and how, you know, if you can reduce those returns by 1 or 2%, yeah, that's a 7-figure difference for a big company. So tapping into returns is something we're really trying to help our clients with at the minute, and pretty much all of them are struggling with it.
Yeah. Well, you detailed all the various different aspects of the solution right now, and it sounds like obviously it gives retailers a lot of choice and options for delivering these personalized deals and messaging to users. So I wanted to ask if you can share any kind of examples of, I know it's a new product, obviously it's not been on the market for long, but if you've got any anecdotes of clients that are already using it.
Yeah, so to be honest, it's so new. We only released it a couple of months ago. So most of our clients who are going to be working with it, it's still sort of in the last stages of QA. We did have some testing clients, and they sort of worked really well for cross sell and sort of bundling as well. So we tested it out on a cosmetic client, and they found it worked really well for, you know, if you're getting your, say, your moisturizer and your something else.
This is your classic.
Yes, I'm obviously the basket, the target audience. Yeah. I do moisturize daily. It's very important.
I can tell.
So sort of completing your product bundle. So like I said earlier, with like you've got the necklace, make sure you get the earrings. If you're getting the moisturizer, you might as well get the toner and the whatever else it would be. And good for multi-buy offers as well. So, you know, 3 for 2, things like that. So we've seen it being useful for cross-selling. In terms of where I think it really moved the needle, like I said, it's looking at things like product margin. It's looking at reducing those return rates, or if we can't reduce the return rate and we just accept that that's the world we live in, then like I say, ring fencing some budget. But some of the best conversations we have with clients is just saying to them like, okay, look, we're gonna set RevWallet up. Tell us your 5 biggest issues and leave us to solve them.
Yeah.
And so we had a great conversation the other day with our product team where we were thinking, you know, what can we do where we see revenue being removed from basket? So it's the standard journey you always see, but you know, you go onto a fashion website and you start adding things to your basket, and then you go, okay, hang on, I didn't want to spend 150 quid. Mm. And you start removing things from your basket. And one thing we can show clients with our tag is we can show them that sweet spot at which clients stop upselling themselves and start removing revenue from their basket. So there was one we were speaking to the other day where their sweet spot was about £80. So below £80, those customers are probably going to just keep adding to their basket. So if you've got 60 in your basket, you're probably going to check out with 70. If you've got 70, you're probably going to check out with 80. If you go up above 80 and you've got, say, 120 in your basket, you're probably going to check out with 95 or 100. It's a different way of looking at it, because at the lower end, you have stretch and save, which we're all used to. But then actually at the higher end, it's more about risk prevention and getting them to keep that revenue in the basket. So we don't need to get them to spend more. We need to get them to remove less. So one thing we looked at is, and that we're going to try and do, is say, if someone removes a certain item from their basket, can we suggest a cheaper alternative? So it's obviously going to rely on some really good product data from the client. But if we say that someone removes, for example, a £50 jumper, can we suggest a £20 jumper? So they feel like they've saved 30 quid. They've actually spent 20 more than they would have done. And so the ways in which we can pivot the solution to answer clients' questions, I think, is really powerful.
Yeah. That kind of that dialogue that you have between yourselves and your product team and the advertiser team as well, I think, is really interesting. It's something that we see emerge a lot, I think, in how a lot of technology partners work. It's a very kind of intimate relationship that they have, and they work closely with those brands to really understand their customers, their customer journeys, and how they can best kind of augment what's already existing on site in that sense. And I just wondered about, when you're speaking to prospective clients about using your tech, whether that's RevWallet or another kind of solution that you've got, what are the common reasons that they give to you for partnering with you via the affiliate channel, for example, rather than building that technology themselves or acquiring something and kind of integrating that into their existing tech stack? And kind of running that activity kind of directly themselves?
Yeah, good question. Ease of implementation, generally. Our whole ethos really is to try and lower that barrier to entry for clients. Like, we work via the affiliate channel because it's easy for customers. You know, we do have some clients who work directly, either because they don't have an affiliate program, or the relationship was started through a UX person or a CMO or whoever. But just having that low barrier to entry, you know, if it's an Awin client, then we can just flick on within the master tag. So actually, you know, we speak to a lot of clients and they say, oh yeah, we love the idea, but we don't have the resource, or, you know, it's going to take ages to get through our tech stack, or, you know, we can't do all the designs. And it's like, well, that's fine. We'll do the heavy lifting. We'll do all the designs. We'll do all the onboarding. We've got a great CS team. We can give you loads of data. We can work on a CPA basis. And if you're with a network that has a container tag or a master tag or whatever you want to call it, then, you know, we ring them up, and with your blessing, they turn it on, and 5 minutes later, it's live. Whereas, you know, when you work directly with the client, you know, even trying to get a tag on site can take, you know, it's not unheard of to take more than a year.
Yeah.
We work with some huge, you know, multinational billion-pound brands on an affiliate model, and it's a great way to get in the door.
Mm, sounds good. Well, just to round things off then with our conversation today, let's look to the future, and I wanted to ask you about what's on the horizon for RevLifter. What new technologies or products or updates have you got coming for us in the new year?
Good question. And I have to think carefully about what I can say so my product team doesn't tell me off. But one thing that we hope to be launching in the not too distant future is a customer-facing login in their own reporting suite. So at the minute, for obvious reasons, we handle all of our reporting in-house via our CS team, and they're great. They're a great CS team. But enabling clients to log in, see the data themselves, is an obvious one, because that then means that, you know, long, long term, we move more towards SaaS opportunities, and that opens up more of the market. Sort of, we have a new back-end interface. So just porting all of our older clients over to the new one. There's more functionality in there. It's better reporting. General housekeeping. But the main ones we're working on customer-facing are, you know, iterating RevWallet to make it as good as possible, and having that customer-facing login with deeper reporting for clients, because the information we can get is really, really good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I think the last thing really is just looking at how we help customers tell their story, I think, is the best way of saying it. So RevWallet and all of our products are great for discounting, but it's not, customers don't only want discounts, they want a good experience. And I think, although it's a really tough trading environment at the minute, and we need to be getting, you know, the right offers to the right people at the right times, not everyone needs an offer to convert, like I said earlier. And a lot of the time, it's the experience that you have on site. And with something like RevWallet, I love saying to clients, like, what story do you want to tell to your customers? You know, what experience do you want them to have? Do you want them to discover new products? Do you want them to discover new product ranges? I was talking to a wine retailer recently, and we were looking at RevWallet, and they were saying, well, we're not really looking to do too many discounts in the next few months. So that's fine. To me, I don't see RevWallet as discounting for you. I see RevWallet as, what story do you want to tell users? Wine buyers are notoriously narrow-minded in that you like your, you know, three or four types of wine, and you pretty much stick to that.
Red, white, and rosé.
And now green wine is right, getting popular as well. But you might like, for example, Pinot Grigio, and you might like Chardonnay, and you might like Sauvignon Blanc, and then you don't realize that actually there is a lot of ones out there that are very similar. You might like Merlot and not know that Shiraz and Pinot Noir are fairly similar flavor profiles. So I was saying to them, like, for me, it's about telling that story to your users that they can enjoy different wines to what they're used to and have a similar experience or drink it with similar food. And none of that is discount led. But what's going to happen is they're going to come on site, they're going to discover more products, they're going to pay more money, and they're going to come back and do it again, and they're going to tell their friends. Yeah. And so I think storytelling is really important. And I think it's important that as an industry, we don't get too, like, obviously, you know, the numbers are the be all and end all at the end of the day, right? But we need to just make sure that we don't only focus on the numbers because of the difficult trading environment, and actually keep telling those positive stories to customers and clients.
Yeah, and I think the two don't have to be mutually exclusive either, in the sense that if you as a customer, say I land on that wine website and I go through that customer journey and I have a really positive experience there, which I find what I was looking for, I kind of get served some inspiration about other products that I'm actually quite interested in as well, and I then end up buying from you and have a good kind of sales experience there, then the chances are, like you say, that I tell my friends and family, that I kind of return as a customer to your site, and then I become a customer that you don't have to acquire all over again, which is marketing costs saved in the future. And that's a really compelling thing, I think, for retailers to be aware of right now, when marketing budgets are being cut. Yeah. And when you know that it's that much more difficult because of the, you know, the nature of e-commerce is that there's competition everywhere, right? You're not just competing with the local kind of Threshers down the road or something. Threshers doesn't even exist anymore. I don't know why I've referenced that, but you're competing against wine retailers kind of across the globe. So I think that there's definitely a lot to be said for that side of what solutions like yourselves can offer.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Pete. Thanks for coming in today. Really thanks appreciate that insight. Great to hear more about RevWallet, and we wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Pete there for speaking with us, and also to Matt, who you heard from earlier. We'll include a link to the Hello Partner site on the page for this episode, where you can find more information about that new venture, as well as one to the RevWallet page too, so you can check out more about that solution if it's of interest. Remember, if you're a brand or agency that's interested in working with RevLifter via Awin, you can find them within the UI by going to your account, hovering over the Toolbox tab, and then selecting Advertiser Master Tag, where you can then browse all of the tech partners available to you. Now, we talked a lot about the recent PR Live conference on this episode, but the night before that all started, Awin was actually in contention for a host of awards at the Global Performance Marketing Awards. And we were delighted to pick up four wins at this year's GPMAs, as well as three highly commended accolades too. So alongside client wins with AO.com and Etsy, we also picked up the coveted Best Network Award, thanks to any of you dear listeners who voted for us in that category, by the way. And our very own Michelle O'Sullivan, who has pioneered Awin Access, our solution for micro SMEs, also won the One to Watch Award, which I can personally attest to the fact that she was extremely chuffed about, because as I was leaving that evening, she was still prancing around on the dance floor, clinging to her trophy. So now Black Friday is looming fast on the horizon, and we have a couple of new content pieces to keep an eye out for. First of all, we've launched a World Cup themed social campaign featuring our Awin 11 of different partner types that you should be working with during the seasonal peak. So with the tournament happening at the same time as Q4's golden quarter, we thought we'd have a bit of fun and use a football analogy. I do love an analogy, to talk about the diversity of marketing options now available within the channel. I will share a link to the post so you can find it easily on LinkedIn for yourself, and you can see which partners actually made our final selection. But more importantly, Kev, what is the latest on the Q4 performance tracker report?
I thought you could ask me something about football.
I should have done actually. Yeah. Who would you play in midfield for England at the moment?
Probably the best England midfielder.
Which would be
if I was pushed.
Yeah, if I were to push you and ask you who that is currently, what would you say?
Give me a clue he plays for. that literally won't make any difference.
I was going to say, yeah.
Does Gary Lineker still play football?
Yeah, if you like.
Gary Lineker in midfield.
Yeah.
He's a striker, wasn't
he? He was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'd maybe clone him and play him in midfield as well as striker.
Yes. Maybe you will take over from Gareth Southgate when he inevitably loses his job after this particular World Cup.
Right, performance tracker. So you may remember that last year we released a performance tracker, which you can find by going to awin.com and searching for Black Friday. And it basically tracked the sales commission and revenue across all of our markets, across all of our advertisers, from, it was sort of around some point in October up to the end of the year. And we included, obviously, last year's data with the previous year's data. What we've done is replicate that. So we've got 2020, 21, and 22's worth, years worth of data going, starting on the October the 1st. It's drilled down by sector, by subsector. There's three different tabs. So there's lots of different ways that you can kind of cut and paste the data and play around with the data, depending on the sector that you're in, if you want to benchmark your performance. We will run that up until the end of the year. It's actually, it's a new and improved report this year in that it's daily updating now. So you don't have to wait until the Monday for the data to update. It automatically updates every day. So I would really recommend it. It's a really nice report. We got some really good feedback off it last year, and people, I think, like benchmarking it and keep going back to it. In fact, I had a couple of people kept contacting me saying, oh, it's not updated. Whereas, as I say, this time it is daily updating. So it's all happening in an automated way. So we don't have to worry about manually updating it. But yeah, if you go to awin.com, search for Black Friday, and you'll find the performance tracker on there.
Nice. Well, that is all we've got time for on this week's episode of Awin Talks. So it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Kev.
Bye.